Welcome to the Women and Wealth podcast with Esther Szabo. Esther is a respected leader in the field of personal financial advice with over 25 years of experience. After going through her own significant and challenging life-changing events, she overcame fear and self-doubt to launch her own successful advisory firm. Now Esther is ready to share her practical and personal experiences to help other women clear their hurdles and brave life's transitions. In this way, she inspires women to lead fulfilling and confident lives.
Hello and welcome to the Women in Wealth podcast with Esther Szabo from Gates Pass Advisors. Today, we're going to be talking about the top five year-end planning considerations. Hello, Esther. How are you?
Hi, Eric. I'm doing very well. How are you doing out there?
Oh, I'm good. The weather is crazy. We got snow yesterday while it was 93 degrees about a week and a half ago. Bananas.
That's wild. You have to dress appropriately so you don't catch a cold.
This is true, or else I just hunker down inside with a nice fire and enjoy, you know, good fire cooked food like hot dogs.
That's good.
It's camping inside. That's what we consider it, because we can't go out there. That's true. Top five year end planning considerations. That's going to be a good list, and we're getting near the year end. So Where do we start with this?
Well, what we're doing with all of our clients right now, we're shifting gears. It's summer is over and we're looking at year end tax planning. A new law went into effect for 2018 for personal and corporate income taxes, but we're just looking at personal here. And it really changed things for those California residents and residents of other states as well that are higher tax states. And what will be changing is that deductions for state and local taxes, they're called SALT taxes, state and local taxes, really been reduced, the amount that one can deduct. It used to be unlimited, and now it's a maximum of $10,000. That really changes things for a number of clients.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a huge jump from unlimited down to 10,000.
Yes, especially when you're looking at the real estate costs that people have here, as well as what we pay in state taxes.
Esther, besides speaking with you, how are your clients finding out about this, or are they just not hearing about it until you tell them?
A number of clients have heard about it, but they're not sure how it has impacted them. Mm. Their tax preparer, their CPA, or their enrolled agent, with a number of tax returns that came in, they did do a comparison of what their taxes would be in 2018 versus 2017 if all was the same in 2018 as it was in 2017, meaning if they had the same income, the same SALT taxes, the same other deductions, what would their taxes look like? So they may have seen that or may not, but we're having fairly robust conversations about it now. So it's a good refresher.
Oh, I bet. All right, what's next on the list?
Also, deductions for professional fees completely eliminated. So this is the miscellaneous part of the Schedule A. If someone was itemizing on their tax return, the deductions for professional fees, that's fees for financial advisors like us, for their tax preparer, for legal fees, all of that is eliminated.
Wow. That sounds like a big change.
It is a large change for a number of clients, and it particularly impacts clients who are high income and who also pay high state and property taxes. A number of those have different professional advisors that they were previously deducting and now cannot.
Obviously, if you make more money, you're going to have higher legal fees, most likely higher tax preparation fees. I mean, that's a double whammy.
Yeah, it's just life gets more complex. Mm. Although the main thing that did not change was the charitable deduction did not change.
Esther, are there ways that your clients can do more with charity that will help them out to kind of offset the other tax things that have been taken away?
There are, obviously, of course, if they're charitably inclined already. There's a relatively new type of account called a donor advised fund that one can do. Mm-hmm. Typically, if one wanted to gift to charity, you just give outright, give the cash or the property. Or you can do different types of charitable estate planning techniques that are more complex, expensive to set up, and require their own tax return every year. So the donor advised fund is a pretty neat type of thing to do. It is an account that you set up. You can set it up at most of the main brokerage firms. We set it up with SEI, which is the trust company that we use for most of our clients' investments. And also there are local ones. If you have a local community charity, we have one in Los Altos, a community foundation. You can even set one up directly through them. And what you contribute into the account, once it's set up, is you can either do cash, or what we're really looking at with clients are appreciated securities. As we've talked about in prior podcasts, we've had a great run in U.S. domestic equity since 2009. Mm-hmm. And certainly in this area, wonderful returns in technology stocks that are located here and some that are not. And we're looking at rebalancing portfolios. We talk a lot about asset allocation, keeping things in right balance. Yet, if you're going to sell some of these securities, it creates a lot of capital gains income, which then we're looking at a year where deductions are not as available, and it creates a bit of a quandary. If a client is inclined to be charitable, we just put in that amount of securities that we plan out, i.e., if let's say they're an Apple, they have Apple stock or Facebook stock, we can allocate a certain amount of Apple stock and just donate it into the donor advised fund.
Nice.
When they donate it, so let's say it's donated in 2018 and they put in $50,000 worth of stock, one gets a deduction on Schedule A for $50,000 in this current year. And one doesn't have to donate it to charities in 2018. It can be spread out over subsequent years. It's not unusual in our planning that we will look at what's called front-loading some of these charitable gifts into a donor-advised fund so that when one isn't earning as much in retirement or in later years, there's still an asset that one can gift to charities from without having to take it out of current expenses and current cash flow.
All right.
So you only get the deduction in the year you contribute into it, but you can use it ongoing. And if somebody passes away, you name a beneficiary and your children can keep it going too. And it's a great source of discussion with younger children as well to sit down and say, okay, this is like our own personal foundation. Where do we want to gift? What charities do we want to donate to this year? And you can really look and see how the asset is shrinking or growing and all the different beneficiaries each year of your donations.
Absolutely. What a fantastic way to teach the next generation and beyond. I mean, I think of grandparents sitting with their grandchildren and letting them take part in this and being able to see the good that the money that they're using is doing for whatever charity it is, and giving them that spirit of giving back and contributing to the community and things that mean a lot to the grandparents, and also enables the children to find things that they enjoy and they right. want to give to.
That they're passionate about.
It's absolutely.
The same thing when one owns individual stocks and, oh, I own Starbucks, so I'm going to go to Starbucks. It's that kind of feeling in a different way. It's like, oh, I live and work in Los Altos. I want to support Los Altos. And really seeing those funds go to work specifically for those organizations through this entity.
Got it. What other things should we be considering for our year-end tax planning?
Well, I'd say the last thing before transition to another part is it's really important to talk with your tax and financial advisors to make a plan to determine how much money or how much in securities makes sense to put into a donor advised fund. Mm-hmm. Because once it's out of your portfolio, it's gone.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a big decision. So definitely want to consult your professionals.
So second on our list of five is also looking if one has mutual funds in one's taxable portfolio, not in the IRAs or 401ks, but in one's taxable portfolio. This is another thing that we're gearing up to do, which is check how much capital gains income those mutual funds are estimating to distribute. Mm. And that comes about because with a mutual fund, there is a manager, or even if it's a passive fund, they can distribute out as well. Not as much, but they can distribute. Mm-hmm. And when the manager sells securities at a higher price than when they bought, there's a capital gain, and that gets distributed out to all of us shareholders.
When does that happen? How do you know when that's going to happen, and what's the timing of it?
The timing is very typically between Thanksgiving and the end of the year.
Okay.
And one can find out by going onto the websites of any mutual funds that one owns. they will say plan distribution. There'll be a button, something like that. And the reason it's so important is, again, we're looking at how much income is estimated to come to a client and be taxable this year. And tying it back to this donor advised funds, we typically have primarily clients own individual securities, but they have historical positions in mutual funds that we're still monitoring and integrating into the overall portfolio. Mm-hmm. And there's one fund that has already announced what its capital gains distribution will be, and it is quite high.
Okay.
What we're looking at there is saying, can we take some or all of these shares and put them in the donor advised fund to take a deduction, and then we avoid that whole capital gains income?
Mm. Well, that's a great strategy.
Yes, it's knowing all of this in advance, getting geared up so that one doesn't find out after this has all been done that there was a big hit that is going to impact one and cause more to come out of one's pocket. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we have done also is, if there isn't a way to make a change in advance, is you can just flip a button and say, okay, we're not going to reinvest these capital gains. Actually, just pay them out in cash, so that we have them handy to pay any applicable tax.
Okay, that's interesting.
And if there's losses available in a portfolio, though it's hard to find losses these days, we've done really well overall just because of the market. It's hard to find losses, but remember that if you do have losses in a portfolio, you can take those losses and offset the gains, whether they're coming from mutual fund capital gains distributions or from actual sales.
Got it. All right. And how do you tell that? Is that something you have to talk to your professional about?
If you have a professional, it's best to talk to a professional, and or if you're keeping track, some statements will show you right on the statement what is your unrealized gain or loss. Or otherwise, if your professional isn't reaching out to you to talk about it, be sure to reach out to them and say, what is it looking like for my taxable income from this portfolio this year?
I would say that if your professional is not reaching out to you to talk about this stuff, you should find another professional.
I agree. I've been shocked at the statements that come in, and clients are not, they're not aware until after the fact. They certainly become aware of all the capital gains income that is happening within their accounts that they're not being spoken to about before at all. It is really shocking to me, because that's money that comes out of the client's pocket.
Absolutely. And it just makes no sense to me that I'm working with a professional and this is their job. I need to know that they're doing their job. I need to know what I don't know, because that's the education that they have. And so many times there are advisors that when the market's not doing well, they're hiding under their desk. Or if there are issues with somebody's account, they just don't know how to reach out appropriately. And it's very frustrating. So
that's right.
All right. Well, so what's next on our list?
Along with that, we've been talking about taxes. This is the time to look at what cash needs am I going to have coming up in 2019, to look at upcoming expenses. Taxes are one. There's, for someone who is on an estimated payment schedule, quarterly estimated payments are due mid-January of 2019. That comes about really quickly after the new year starts.
Yeah, right after Christmas. I mean, that's going to be here in a heartbeat.
Really fast, yes. And it's something that we don't typically talk about in the summer. We may review it with a client briefly, but we really come back at this time of the year and say, okay, where are we at for the rest of 2018? And now let's look at 2019. Let's look at those quarterlies. Let's look at the things that you want to do. Let's look at travel. Are we replacing a vehicle this year? What about home improvements? All of those things, let's check and make sure that we have the funds available for those, or have a discussion about where those funds are going to come from. It all ties together. All of this ties together with capital gains, income planning, tax planning, and planning for enjoying life in the coming year as well.
I would assume that the reason you want to look at what the cash needs are is because your 2018 work year, let's say that it's a married couple and they're both working the entire year. That's great. They've had their income for the entire year, but maybe in 2019, one of them plans to stop working 6 months into the year or 8 months into the year for whatever reason. So that's going to reduce their income in 2019. So it would be probably wiser to take the cash out of whatever source you determine in January, so it's not included on 2018 taxes. Does that sound right?
That would certainly be a way to do it. Obviously, yes. If your income is dropping in 2019, we have a number of clients in this situation for one reason or another, that 2018 is a very high tax year. If we know we need to do something to generate income, yes, we want to push that into a future year and not do it now.
That makes sense.
All of this is looking at one's portfolio, going even deeper. One should look at their portfolio and the goals of the portfolio in light of the current market and economic data. We had a big drop in the market for a couple days last week. We kind of appear to be evening out right now, but who knows? That could change at any moment. And before this happened, before the drop, many clients were asking, I'm really concerned about where the market is. When is it going to drop? It's got to drop. It's got to. And that's true. It has to. They may have missed that it did already drop 10% earlier this year in the first quarter. And if one is focusing too much on when is it going to drop, that tells me we have to step back and look at the portfolio and how it's allocated. What are the short-term parts of the portfolio? How are they there to fund the short-term needs and the longer-term parts of the portfolio, which is the equities? One really needs to leave those untouched and know that they can leave them untouched. Maybe they'll use the income, but the principal they can leave untouched for a long period of time because nobody can tell you when those drops will happen. Right now, the big issue is trade war with China. Is it going to happen? How is it going to impact us? How is it going to impact the U.S. economy? When the corporate income tax, we had the first year in 2018, big decline. As we move forward, and that's somewhat digested into quarterly numbers from corporations, what's going to be the next thing that to provide a catalyst? And it doesn't look like there's anything really that different on the horizon. Certainly nothing with as big of a jolt as a big income tax has. The markets are looking out and looking at issues with China and how that will impact corporations, their decisions to build new plants and factories, and obviously what it will do in terms of their cost of goods if they're importing, and how that will impact inflation. We've got fairly good numbers overall in our economy. We've got low unemployment. Inflation is very moderate. Interest rates are low. I know our president was concerned that our Federal Reserve was out of control and going too fast, but that's really not what the economists are saying. They're saying it's very, very moderate increases. And profits have overall been good by corporations. So the sense is that we have an underlying very strong U.S. economy, albeit growing slowly, but still healthy.
In the right direction.
In the right direction. Yes. You want that upward growth.
Yeah.
And we're also coming up against an election in a few weeks.
That's right.
And with that, we've all heard the market hates uncertainty, and there is uncertainty with that. But I came across some interesting facts that I wanted to share about what happens with the stock market, what happens with gross domestic product, which is the growth of our economy, under different Republican control, democratically controlled, and mixed control government.
All right.
The interesting thing is we have divided government over 60% of the time. We're right now in a unusual time that happens only about 11% where it's all Republican controlled. And during that time, the average return on the market is over 6%, 6.3. And the average growth in the economy is a little under 2.8. When the Democrats are in control of the government, we do have a lower return on equities as measured by the S&P 500, where that's about a 4.3% return. But growth on the GDP is higher at a little over 4.4. But divided government is, like I said, what we have almost two-thirds of the time. So it's not unusual. If that is what happens as a result of this election, that's actually more the typical than the atypical. And the bottom line is one should not let politics determine one's investment decisions. Those need to come from one's personal goals, one's ability to last for the long term, one's own risk capacity and risk tolerance, all of these things we've been talking about in prior podcasts.
Absolutely. And the bottom line is get a professional that's going to help take the emotion out of the decisions, will listen to you and know where you want to go and the goals that you have, but takes the emotion out of it that we all have in the panic that we can sometimes have just by watching the news.
Right. And the news comes at us in so many different ways all through the day.
Yep.
The last thing I'd like to talk about is not something so specific as taxes and portfolios and cash planning. It's really because I focus on women in transition. And this may be your first year going through this fourth quarter, which also includes a number of kind of loaded holidays, whether that's Halloween, Thanksgiving, Hanukkah, Christmas. it can be challenging if it's the first or second year without your partner or a good friend or a family member that's been really, really important to you.
Absolutely.
And so I have some suggestions about how to navigate that, having gone through that myself. Part of it is this is a great time to think ahead about what would feel really good to you, really nurturing to one who's transitioning, who's dealing with the transition of a loved one. I know that David and I, for Halloween, we used to love to get pumpkins and carve pumpkins together and greet the kids in our neighborhood. We did not have children ourselves, and so we loved seeing the kids come in all their costumes. And I had to think, well, do I want to just give all that up this year and just shut the door and keep the house dark? And I didn't like that feeling at all. So my first year, which was 4 years ago, I reached out to my mom and said, would you come and stay with me at Halloween? And I carved pumpkins with her and we gave out the candy together. And it was really sweet. It was a really sweet time to spend with my mom. And although it had some notes of sadness, which, you know, you just can't avoid, they're going to be there. It was a really gentle way to get through that holiday. And I strongly recommend things that do feel gentle. It's a pretty intense time going through the holidays. There are just that many more expectations that are often added on. That loaded feeling of togetherness and connection that maybe we're not quite feeling, and to really think about how to just get through that particular 24-hour period in a way and with the people that would feel most nurturing and understanding.
Esther, do you mind if I ask you a couple personal things about this?
Sure.
I can imagine that, I mean, it obviously there was a huge amount of pain involved and a lot of struggle emotionally with processing. And there's no right or wrong answers when you're grieving, and I understand that. But having not lost a spouse or somebody that close or in that position, I truly don't know. But how did you balance being able to spend time with family and friends and then having that time where you could be quiet and grieve and be by yourself but not get stuck in that spot? Like you said, you know, do I just shut off the lights and let the kids go to the next house? Because that was definitely an option, but you chose something different. How do you make that balance?
I think a key piece is who is on your team, who is on your support team. Mm-hmm. I have had a wonderful therapist and counselor who worked with David and I on when we had trouble spots during our marriage, those challenging times. Mm-hmm. So she knew him really well. She was a great touchstone. I think of these people as the touchstones. I have some other, just a few really close connections that I felt very comfortable sharing anything with and still do. They are still a part of my life. I think that's a key part of the balance, is not keeping it all inside, especially as strong leader type women. We can tend to say, okay, we've got to have this stiff upper lip. And certainly men have that too. I'm not mm-hmm. excluding you men at all from that. I think it's even harder for men. And to just have those people to say, this is what's going on and this is what's happening. That's one. And another is to allow space in the day. We live in really hectic full times. Have you noticed, Eric?
Not at all. Absolutely.
There is just all the email and all the tasks to do, and there's so much activity. Just to plan out those white spaces on the calendar and to leave them white. And know that, okay, if I'm having a tough time and it's a little too lonely, where can I go? What can I do? One of the places for me was my gym, because I didn't have to make a plan to meet with anybody, because I didn't know if I'd want to meet with anyone or not. Yeah. So my gym was a great place, because I have, there's just a number of those familiar faces. If you've been at a gym for any number of years and you always go at one particular time, those people go at one particular time, you just see them. And it's just that friendly connection of a friendly face is another way.
Yeah. And keeping a routine of some kind that's not a rigid routine, but making sure that you're keeping a routine that keeps you healthy. Is that a good summary?
Yes, absolutely. Just it's a balance there too, making sure one isn't a slave to one's routine, but then having the routine was certainly in those early years, the year one and two especially. I had a certain amount where I would work and a certain amount where I would just come home and have quiet. And then go to do, whether it's a support group, have a connection in with a support group, and feeling one's way through, but really honoring I knew when I was getting too tired, if I got too tired, that was not good.
Yeah.
Because it was, I just didn't have the resources to deal with the grief and everything else. So I had to really monitor and just allow myself, if I got too tired or was concerned about that, to just let myself rest.
Yeah, that's important. Esther, thank you so much for sharing. I really appreciate it. And I know that the listeners do. If you are going through a transition and this is your first, second, third, fourth year, and you need to reach out, Esther probably has some pretty good resources for you too, that she's used in her history and some things around the community that might help. Please reach out to her. She's an amazing woman. Thank you, Esther, so much for your time today.
Thanks, Eric.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to the Women in Wealth podcast with Esther Szabo. If you have not subscribed to the podcast yet, please click the subscribe now button below. This way, when Esther comes out with a new podcast, it'll show up directly on your listening device. This makes it much easier to share these podcasts with your friends and family. And again, there's a lot of great information in here, but if you have a friend that's going through a hard time and transition right now, this may be something to share with her as well, or him. Please do that. Again, thanks for listening today. For everyone at Gates Pass Advisors, this is Eric Johnson reminding you to live your best day every day. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Women and Wealth podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you receive notifications of new podcasts as they become available. Check out the website at www.gatespassadvisors.com for more information. This content is developed from sources believed to be providing accurate information. The information in this material is not intended as tax or legal advice. Please consult legal or tax professionals for specific information regarding your individual situation. The opinions expressed and material provided are for general information and should not be considered a solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security.